Welcome to the special edition of the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Paul Hitchcock. On this special program, a reflection on World War II and the Battle of Normandy, when more than 150,000 American, British, and Canadian forces landed on a 50-mile stretch of beach in France's Normandy region. Through rare and vintage audio, we'll hear an historical perspective on D-Day, which began on June 6, 1944. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Paul Hitchcock. On this special program of the Golden Age of Radio, a reflection on World War II and the Battle of Normandy, when more than 150,000 American, British, and Canadian forces landed on a 50-mile stretch of beach in France's Normandy region. Through rare vintage audio, we'll hear an historical perspective on D-Day, which began on June 6, 1944. Right now, here's Tommy Tucker with I Never Mention Your Name, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Say, don't forget, Uncle Sam still needs those used fats. Needs them more than ever for munitions and military medicines. So save every drop. Most meats aren't rationed now, so you can double or even triple your used fat savings. So do that, won't you? Save used fats and turn them into your butcher immediately.
Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company presents War Telescope, a weekly report on the war as seen by NBC's reporter John McVane in London. We take you now to John McVane, the NBC newsroom in London.
This is John McVane in London. A little while ago, one of the many invasion exercises was taking place on the coast of Britain. Everything had been carefully planned. The three services, Army, Navy, and Air Force of two nations were involved. Just as a group of landing craft approached the shore, the weather changed. The sun disappeared, and one of those quick sea fogs enveloped the landing craft and the beaches. The troops making the mock attack, and the troops guarding the shore. In one invasion craft, some soldiers were huddled together, waiting for the moment that the boat touched shore. One man was worried. He said, "This is the moment we should be getting our air support. Where are our planes?" That was one GI's view. As the day of invasion approaches, thousands of British and American planes on airfields all over Britain are ready to launch the greatest blow that air forces have ever struck in cooperation with the ground troops. From the air standpoint, the invasion is on. These planes are flying thousands of sorties against the enemy. They're grouped under one command, the Allied Expeditionary Air Force, headed by Air Chief Marshal Sir Trafford Lee Mallory. American 9th Air Force, British 2nd Tactical Air Force, combined to form General Eisenhower's Air Arm, the air power of Supreme Headquarters. The functions of the AEAF are varied. Troop carriers and gliders and hospital planes are only a few of the types of aircraft. But most important are the striking planes, the fighters, fighter bombers and bombers that will reach out ahead of our troops to blast the way across the continent. Fighters that will guard the fighting men of the Allied nations from enemy air attack. And today are already driving the Luftwaffe out of the air. Eisenhower and Montgomery know the value of close air support for ground troops. This time, all the past experience of the two countries will go into the air hammer that'll crack down on enemy defenses with terrific force. We return you now to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Every Saturday afternoon at this time, John McVain can be heard on The War Telescope. So tune in again next Saturday afternoon at this same time. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Ladies and gentlemen, by now most of us know all the facts about war bonds. How many 50 caliber bullets go into a $25 bond? How many hand grenades go into a $50 bond? And the amount of life-saving and fighting weapons that go into a $100 bond. But as a nation, we won't even be knee-deep in this war until every last one of us with a few dollars jingling in his pocket walks up to Uncle Sam and says, "Here, Uncle, better use this money now so my family will be able to use it in the future." We know that we owe this money, for we know that day after day and month after month of a long, vicious war, our men overseas have been piling up a debt we can never quite pay in full. In the sky over Germany this very night, men are spending their lives so we may walk into our bank and buy a little chunk of freedom that, like our bonds, will still be good 10 years from tonight. This war bond in my pocket is the finest bargain in the world. Thank you.
Of this great adventure, I send my best wishes to every soldier in the Allied team. To us is given the honor of striking a blow for freedom which will live in history. And in the better days that lie ahead, men will speak with pride of our doings. We have a great and a righteous cause. Let us pray that the Lord, mighty in battle, will go forth with our armies, and that his special providence will aid us in the struggle. I want every soldier to know that I have complete confidence in the successful outcome of the operations that we are now about to begin. With stout hearts and with enthusiasm for the contest, let us go forward to victory.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Harry tells me this tune is really new. Kitty Callan sings it, so as time goes by, keep listening for In Times Like These.
This program of music by Harry James and his orchestra to bring you a bulletin just received in the WOR newsroom. London. The German news agency Transocean said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. This, however, is an unsubstantiated enemy claim. We repeat, this is an unsubstantiated enemy claim. Stay tuned to WOR for further details.
CBS World News, Bob Trout speaking. And again, we bring you the available reports, all of them from German sources, on what the Berlin radio calls the invasion. There is still no Allied confirmation from any source. Correspondents who rushed to the War Department in Washington soon after the first German broadcast was heard were told that our War Department had no information on the German reports. There's been no announcement of any sort from Allied headquarters in London. The first news of the German announcement reached this country at 12:37 a.m. Eastern Wartime. The Associated Press recorded this broadcast and immediately pointed out that it could be one which Allied leaders have warned us to expect from the Germans. Shortly after 1 a.m. Eastern Wartime, the Berlin radio opened its news program with a so-called invasion announcement. Columbia's shortwave listening station here in New York heard the Berlin radio say, and I quote, "Here is a special bulletin. Early this morning, the long-awaited British and American invasion began when paratroops landed in the area of the Somme estuary. The harbor of Le Havre is being fiercely bombarded at the present moment. Naval forces of the German Navy are off the coast fighting with enemy landing vessels. We just brought you a special bulletin." End of the quotation. That is the invasion announcement as heard from the Berlin radio by Columbia's shortwave listening station. Now here's what Transocean, one of the German news agencies, says, and I quote, "Early Tuesday morning, landing craft and light warships were observed in the area between the mouth of the Somme and the eastern coast of Normandy. At the same time, paratroops were dropped from numerous aircraft on the northern tip of the Normandy Peninsula. It is believed that these paratroops have been given the task of capturing airfields in order to facilitate the landing of further troops. The harbor of Le Havre is at the moment being bombarded. And, continues the broadcast, German naval forces have engaged enemy landing craft off the coast. The transocean broadcast, still unconfirmed, concludes this way. The long-expected Anglo-American invasion appears to have begun. This is the full text of the German transocean broadcast as recorded by the Associated Press. The German-controlled Calais radio came on the air today with this announcement in the English language, quote, "This is D-Day. We shall now bring music for the Allied invasion forces." So said the German-controlled Calais radio across the channel from England. Now, it should be remembered, of course, that the Germans are quite capable of faking this entire series of reports. Their main reason for doing so, in addition to trying to smoke out Allied plans, would be to try to start a premature uprising by the resistance movements along the Channel coast. But the French and the Belgians and the Dutch have all been warned about this possibility repeatedly. And you will recall that Prime Minister Winston Churchill some time ago warned that we could expect false alarms or diversionary feints before the big show began. The British radio, which at 1 a.m. Eastern wartime sent a warning to residents of the Dutch coast to evacuate inland to a distance of at least 18 miles, might merely have been broadcasting the latest in the series of such warnings that have been given to the civilian populations all along the so-called invasion coast of Europe. No other British report that might indicate that the invasion is on has been released, unless we are to take as significant the report from London half an hour ago that the Royal Air Force was over enemy territory during the night. Even on the enemy side, there are clear reasons for doubting the German report that the invasion has started. The Paris radio at 1 a.m. Eastern wartime said nothing about any invasion operations in its regular news report. Well, as I said, there is as yet no reason to believe the German story. Nevertheless, because of high public interest in this country, Columbia is planning to continue overtime operations tonight to all of its affiliate stations until such time as the enemy accounts are proved false or official word from Allied sources is forthcoming. You may listen to this network with assurance that all sources of news will be properly labeled and that we will interrupt programs only with news of exceptional importance and will bring you frequent summaries of all information available.
The National Broadcasting Company will continue its network service throughout the remainder of the night in view of the important, but so far unconfirmed, reports from overseas. Now, for a report from NBC's observers in the nation's capital, we take you to Washington.
And this is Richard Harkness in the NBC newsroom in Washington. The Germans are proclaiming this morning, without Allied confirmation, that the Allied invasion of Europe has begun. The Germans say that Allied airborne troops are parachuting down over France and that Allied naval forces are bombarding Le Havre, the French port across the Channel from Britain. So far, ladies and gentlemen, the news is this. The first word of this invasion, if it is an invasion, came from the Nazis. At 12:37 o'clock this morning, which is 6:37 a.m. in Great Britain, this word came flashing into the NBC newsroom from London. London, Tuesday, June 6th. The German news agency, Transocean, said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. Then, a few minutes later, the Nazi radio said this, that Allied warships that German warships are battling enemy landing ships at Le Havre. That German warships are battling enemy, which would be Allied landing ships, at Le Havre. And this German broadcast was recorded by the Associated Press in London and dispatched to this country. The broadcast added that Allied ships were bombarding the French city, which is just across the English Channel, some 80 miles from Great Britain. Still, there was and is no Allied confirmation of these reports. Then at 12:58 o'clock this morning, this bit of news came from Washington. The bulletin said this. The War Department says it has no information on reports by the German radio that invasion operations have begun on the French Channel coast. And then only a few minutes ago, Elmer Davis, director of the Office of War Information, rushed to his headquarters here in Washington this morning immediately after being notified of these German reports. Elmer Davis told a reporter, "We have no more information than you have. I'll stay here until I find out whether the story is true or not." And by 1:45 a.m. this morning, almost the entire public relations staff at the War Department had reported for duty in the big Pentagon building across the Potomac River in Virginia. Despite the fact of no Allied confirmation, only a few minutes later, there came a bulletin from London which seemed, at least, to indicate that activities of a military nature were underway across the Channel. Coming quickly on the heels of our liberation of Rome, and so quickly, too, after President Roosevelt's address to the United States last night on our triumph in Italy. Shortly before 7 o'clock European time, the British Broadcasting Corporation, which is an official British government branch, issued urgent instructions to the citizens of Holland in the strategic lowlands. The BBC advised all Hollanders living within 18 miles of the invasion coast to leave their homes immediately, to keep off the road, to keep off the railroad lines, and to keep away from all bridges. And then, only a few minutes ago, another BBC broadcast recorded in New York warned residents of France that a new phase of the air war against the continent had begun and told them to stand by for further instructions that would be dropped by leaflet from American and British planes. And still later, the official German news agency, DNB, came into the picture with the German version of the news this evening. DNB said that Allied airborne troops were being landed in the vicinity of the Seine River, which is in the neighborhood of Le Havre. Presumably, the Germans said, the task of these airborne troops was to take a number of aerodromes on the continent of Europe. These troops, the Nazis went on, were parachuting down on the tip of the Normandy Peninsula. Now, that is the spot news on the invasion so far this evening. Only German claims with no confirmation whatsoever from any Allied force, either official or unofficial.
You know, now that the invasion is actually underway, I don't believe there's one of us who doesn't feel a deep personal obligation to every man on the invasion front. We all feel that nothing is too much for us to do to back up our men, that nothing we could do could even compare with what they're doing for us. Well, there are many things we can do, but one thing we must do right away is put every dollar we don't absolutely have to use for food and rent and doctor's bills into war bonds. Yes, we must give our men our all-out financial support right away. For the greater the battle, the greater their need of our money for equipment. And right now, they're engaged in the greatest battle in our history. The greatest battle in the history of the world, actually. Yes, whatever we do, we must all dig deep into our pockets and our savings accounts and put every dollar we can possibly spare into war bonds right away. It's now or never. We all realize that. It's get behind our fighting men now with everything we've got, or let them down when they need us most. And there's not one of us who could bear to do that.
On this critical day in our history, our thoughts are with our valiant men who stormed the fortress of Europe. And our hearts are united in a single prayer, the prayer that God will watch over the men we love, granting the victory for which they fight and the lasting peace which victory will bring.
Oh, a Yank and a tank is a team that can't be beat. We fight with all our might till our enemies retreat. Our brothers in arms on the sea and in the air are darn glad to know that the tankers are in there, where big cannons roar and the shells go whistling by and guidons fly right against the sunny sky. No matter what the odds may be, the Yanks in the tanks roll along to victory.
Oh, the armored command has the stuff to see it through. No man will fail in the fighting tanker crew.
You're listening to a special program of the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring an historical perspective of D-Day, which began on June 6, 1944. Vintage audio and rare news reports courtesy of the Internet Archives, BBC, CBS, NBC, VDisc, and WOR. In a moment, we'll continue with this special reflection of D-Day, the Battle of Normandy. I'm Paul Hinchcock, and this is the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Paul Hinchcock, and you're listening to a special edition of the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. On this special program, a reflection on World War II and the Battle of Normandy, when more than 150,000 American, British, and Canadian forces landed on a 50-mile stretch of beach in France's Normandy region. Through rare and vintage audio, an historical perspective on D-Day, which began on June 6, 1944. Right now, here are the Southern Sons with Ring Them Golden Bells as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
There is a land beyond the river, Lord, that they call sweet forever, and we'll only reach that shore by faith degree, one by one we'll gain the port of dawn, that you dwell with the immortals. For when they ring them golden bells for you and me, for you and me.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night, when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed. But we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day without rest until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war. For these men are lately drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise and tolerance and goodwill among all thy people. They yearn but for the end of battle, for their return to the haven of home. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom. And for us at home, fathers, mothers, children, wives, sisters, and brothers of brave men overseas, whose thoughts and prayers are ever with them, help us, Almighty God, to rededicate ourselves in renewed faith in Thee in this hour of great sacrifice. Many people have urged that I call the nation into a single day of special prayer. But because the road is long and the desire is great, I ask that our people devote themselves in a continuance of prayer. As we rise to each new day, and again when each day is spent, let words of prayer be on our lips, invoking thy help to our efforts. Give us strength, too. Strengthen our daily tasks. Redouble the contributions we make in the physical and the material support of our armed forces. And let our hearts be stout to wait out the long travail, to bear sorrows that may come, to impart our courage unto our sons, wheresoever they may be. And, O Lord, give us faith Give us faith in thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, faith in our united crusade. Let not the keenness of our spirit ever be dulled. Let not the impacts of temporary events, of temporal matters of but fleeting moment, let not these deter us in our unconquerable purpose. With thy blessing, we shall prevail over the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations into a world unity that will spell a sure peace. A peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President has just led the nation in prayer. We return you now to New York.
Columbia's news headquarters in New York, Bob Trout speaking. We've heard the prayer of the President of the United States, written by the President and broadcast by him from Washington.
At this time, CBS World News will attempt to bring you a scheduled address to the people of France by General Charles de Gaulle, leader of the French Committee of National Liberation. General de Gaulle will speak from London.
General de Gaulle says that never have France's forces of the air, sea, and land had such a glorious opportunity to distinguish themselves. And he speaks of the glories which the French armies have just achieved in the Italian campaign. General de Gaulle says that the action which the French armies will carry out with the Allies against the enemy will be exactly conjugated with those of the Allies. And with these actions, that of French resistance will also be combined. And General de Gaulle says that it is absolutely necessary that all French patriots capable to act by arms and by refusing to work for the Germans should not allow themselves to be taken prisoner. And General de Gaulle said in concluding that the Battle of France has begun.
The paratroops are landing. They're landing all around me as I speak. They've come in from the sea, and they're fluttering down, red, white, and blue parachutes fluttering down, and they're just about the best thing that we've seen for a good many hours. They're showering in. There's no other word for it.
It's just about 9 o'clock and a whole mass of gliders has just come in, having been towed across the channel from Britain. They've received a particularly severe welcome from the German AKAC defenses, and the flak has been going up from all around us. I can see about 4 or 5 coming in through the trees, skimming very low over the ploughed field and coming into touchdown. There'll barely be room for them.
This is the day and this is the hour. The sky is lightning. Lightning over the coast of Europe as we go in. The sun is blazing down brightly now. It's almost like an omen, the way it suddenly came out just as we were going in. The whole sky is bright. The sea is a glittering mass of silver, with all these craft of every kind moving across it, and the great battleships in the background blazing away at the shore.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is a special bulletin read by John Snay. D-Day has come. Early this morning, the Allies began the assault on the northwestern face of Hitler's European fortress. The first official news came just after 9:30, when Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force issued communique number 1. This said, under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces supported by strong air forces began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France.
We are on the
beach today on D-Day. We've just come in. We caught a ride in a small boat which came in from our LST loaded with 1,000 pounds of TNT. Half a ton of high explosive on this beach, which is still under considerable enemy gunfire. These boys are apparently having a pretty tough time in here on the beaches. It's not very pleasant. It's exposed, and it must have been a rugged fight to get it. We can look on down the coast now and see this flat part of the beach, which joins the water, going all the way down to the lower beach, which is marked for us by columns of white smoke which are rising from it. And further up at the end of this beach, you can see another huge column of white smoke, which has apparently been caused by naval gunfire. Looking out to sea, all we can see of the vast invasion fleet which is assembled for us are the silhouettes of the big warships, the battleships and cruisers, which have been putting a steady bombardment against the enemy positions all day. The troops are well dug in here along the seawall, which is partly covered by sand. They're sitting down now, most of them, dug deep into the ground, as close as they can to the seawall to protect themselves from the enemy shelling. We're standing here. It's an absolutely incredible and fantastic sight. I don't know whether it's possible to describe it to you or not. The sea is choppy, and the beach is lined with men and materials and guns, trucks, vehicles of all kinds. On either side of us, there are pillars of smoke, perhaps a mile, 2 miles away, which is rising from enemy shelling. And further back, we can see the smoke and results of our own shelling. This place even smells like an invasion. It has a curious odor, which we always associate with modern war. It's a smell of oil and it's high explosive and burning things. This has been a momentous occasion for all of us.
A bulletin, London. A naval officer just returned to Supreme Allied Headquarters from the French invasion beaches reports that all main points have been gained and that reinforcements are pouring across the channel in an unprecedented stream.
This is Larry Meyer speaking from London. It was tough. It was really brutal. I'm speaking now about the invasion of France, as I saw it and as everybody else described it. Yesterday, I was on the American beachhead in Normandy, where I saw our boys as they fought and fell and advanced up the cliffs and river valleys far south of the valley of the Seine River. There is no point in giving the impression that American troops are so superior that they just battle their way past mediocre opposition deep into France. The opposition was terrific. Our losses were many. We expected that. To look at it, up there on the beaches of Normandy, the picture was pretty grim. But that is the price that was expected. And so far as we have been able to learn tonight, casualties have been lower than anticipated. I went to one of the toughest beaches with one of the earliest waves on the very first landings yesterday. The fact that it was one of the hardest beaches to crack was not of my choosing. The Germans were the ones who decided that. The early morning had been filled with drama and, literally, with fireworks. The inferno broke loose when hundreds of our planes began plastering the beaches and strafing German positions. Then our big battle wagons opened fire on the casemates and pillboxes that studded the cliffs above the shell and sand beaches. I was on what is known as an APA, or assault transport. She is a 10,000-ton ship, as young as ships go, as the troops aboard her were young. When D-Day was over, there were two major questions everybody wanted answered. Were the Germans taken by surprise? We set sail from a British port the evening before. A big fleet moved out in broad daylight. The sky was overcast, but there was nothing to keep the German reconnaissance planes from sweeping in under the clouds. The sky remained cloudy all night, but there was a moon whose beams penetrated the overcast, and still there was no reaction from the Nazis. It was not until our fleet of landing ships and mother ships took up position off the invasion coast of France, and the Allied Air Force and the battle wagons opened up, that the Germans showed any signs of reaction. I have discussed this phenomenon with many other war correspondents and military and naval officers. And the general agreement is that the Germans really were caught cold. This is Larry Meyer, representing the Combined American Networks. I now return you to the United States.
Here is Don Hollenbeck.
Allied armies in Normandy push closer tonight to their immediate objectives, the port of Cherbourg and the railway town of Caen, 10 miles inland. An American flying wedge of parachute troops and infantrymen has cut the main line of German communications to Cherbourg by capturing the town of Saint-Mère-Église, 19 miles away, and sweeping on across the main peninsular railway and the highway that runs parallel to it. Communique number 8 tonight says again, satisfactory progress. And here's a summary of the situation as Supreme Headquarters sees it. Heavy fighting in all areas, particularly around Caen, where the Germans are making a frantic effort to stop the advance of the British and Canadians. Both sides are using more and more armor. So far, the Germans haven't been able to match ours. A good many of the German strong points that had to be bypassed have now been eliminated. Weather is still foul, but supplies are getting through to the beachheads, although air activity has been cut to a minimum. Tonight's communique tells of a sea battle off Brittany before dawn today. 8 Allied destroyers, none of them American, blew up a German destroyer, ran another aground, and damaged 2 more off Ousant Island, due west of Brest. An American-led destroyer force intercepted a force of heavily armed German torpedo boats and drove them off the beachhead area in the Seine Bay, around the islands of Saint-Marcouf. The Allied offensive is entering its most critical phase tonight, with little prospect that the danger will pass for at least 10 days more. The biggest ally the Germans have had so far is the weather. It has delayed the unloading of our supplies, and the beachhead just doesn't get along without supplies. We're getting stuff ashore despite this break. When the weather does turn fine, everybody will breathe easier, except the Germans. Our air punch, too, depends on weather. The Allies need this great striking power to keep German reserves out of the battle. But one great advantage the Allies possess is initiative. Our commanders know where we're going, and the Germans don't. With control of the seas, the Allies can go anywhere they wish.
I am telling you today about the liberation of Paris. Though there was still fighting in the streets, Paris went absolutely mad. Paris and ourselves were in a delirium of happiness yesterday, and all last night, and today. Yesterday was the most glorious and splendid thing I've ever seen. The first French and American patrols got into the outskirts of Paris the night before last. Yesterday morning the soldiers were coming in force. I came in with them, with French troops, into Paris. We were among the first vehicles, and the people just went mad. We drove for miles, saluting with both hands, and shouting Vive la France till we lost our voices. Every time we stopped for a second, hundreds of girls pressed round the jeep to kisses, and to inundate us with flowers. There was machine gun fire, rifle fire by German snipers, and an occasional shot from a tank. For half an hour we watched the fighting, battle in the streets of Paris. It was indescribably dramatic, fighting, yet the people frantic with the joy of liberation. We saw Germans stop fighting and come with white flags to surrender to the French soldiers lying behind their barricades, and we drove through the wildly cheering crowds with our arms round each other. We crossed the river to the Ile de la Cité, the cradle of Paris history, and us there now, hand in hand with history, and past Notre Dame, and then up the Avenue of the Opera to the Scribe Hotel. Here the crowds were just beginning to come into the streets, mad with happiness.
Don't you be weary, don't you be dreary, 'cause that trumpet's gonna sound. Just keep your eyes peeled and keep your lips sealed, 'cause when that good news gets around, my man too, brothers and sisters, listen to me about the great day coming and that jubilee. Pay attention to me, children, and listen now. When that great day comes, you'll have to holler, ow, your man and my man too. Your man and my man too. Your man and my man too will be coming home to stay. Great day in the morning when that peaceful sun will be dawning. Oh, say, what a gay time. Why, the night will seem just like daytime. Happy we'll be.
Now more than 24 hours since our invasion got underway. The communique from Allied headquarters on the first day's operations says that our initial landings in northern France were successful, and it appears we've achieved a tactical surprise. It wasn't until after our armada of ships was well on its way from Britain that an enemy channel patrol spotted our movements not long before dawn. That's the world news picture as D-Day ends.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You've been listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and a reflection on World War II in the Battle of Normandy, known as D-Day, which began on June 6, 1944. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Vintage audio and rare news reports courtesy of BBC, CBC, CBS, NBC, and VDisc. I'm Paul Hinchcock. Thanks for listening to this special program of the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.